Welcome to COD Culture. We're going to try this again, folks. And here today, Jeff and Carrie, for all of your COD Culture needs. Carrie, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I think I'm well.
Good.
We threw out our old music.
Apparently.
Apparently we threw out the old host.
Oh, that's mean.
No, we didn't. She's doing great, thanks.
Good.
Yeah, so I didn't know if we were going to be here.
It sounded like it was a pretty definitive no until everybody came forward and started begging for COD Culture to come back.
I mean, so. Beg
and plead.
Well, we did get a lot of requests or questions, and that's flattering. Like, I think that's kind of fabulous.
Oh, it's awesome. I was surprised that I got some messages asking if COD Culture was coming back. It's like, I'm not a regular member of it, but I can ask.
Yeah. And so I think that ultimately we don't know what that format looks like.
No, we're just...
I begged you to show up.
That's not true. I volunteered to come on.
Well, that's fair.
Get something back on a schedule, whatever that schedule ends up being.
Every other week, every week. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, maybe it'll be every other week until we can get a rhythm again, and then every week, or...
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. So, for all the listeners out there that have been around for the past 45. We're just shy of a year.
Yeah.
Since Nicole and I started it. And, you know, the original goal was to create a funeral/death-related podcast that was not for the industry person. So not for someone who worked in a funeral home or did anything around it. And it's kind of interesting because I've got about a 50-50 feedback from people as far as, like, there's 50% of people that are just kind of curious about, like, the funeral profession and what we do. And then there's the other half, which is actual industry people.
Right.
And it shocks me that anyone in our profession actually wants to hear this.
Yeah, I agree and I disagree because... Previously, when it was Nicole on, I would listen to them on my runs. I would, you know, a mid-length run, so that way I can just listen to it, and by the time it's over, I'd be pretty much done. But it was kind of nice. I mean, I talked to both of you often enough where it's like, none of it is news to me, none of it's a new opinion.
So then why did you listen to it?
It was just kind of fun. I don't know. It's like talking to friends without having to talk.
Okay. That sounds introverted.
You know.
But you're not really an introvert, but all right.
Whatever. But I don't know. For other industry professionals, I'm not sure what the appeal is. I welcome it, by all means. But if, say, a different funeral home was hosting a podcast, I don't know how eager I would be to just jump in and start listening. But, I mean, maybe.
Interesting.
Depends on the topics.
Well, I mean, I think the future of this sort of hinges on a few things. I think, you know, our ability, our collective ability to find guests that want to be part of this. I would love to have funeral directors and or professionals from around the country or around the world.
That'd be cool.
Just to kind of get an idea of, like, we are so Seattle-centric here, and it's easy to remember that this is not everyone's bubble, it's just our bubble.
Right. And I mean, so much of my education was more Midwest funeral home centric, a little bit more traditional in a lot of ways, but I haven't personally experienced it. It was just the teachings of, but I haven't been there on call at 3 a.m.
That's how that test lines up though, right?
Right.
I mean, you gotta teach the test that comes out of, where was it, Arkansas? The conference?
Oh, I can't even remember.
I'll ask the research department. Well, that said, here we are.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's kind of interesting. One of the things I wanted to kind of revisit here is just sort of the basics and removals and what removals are and, you know, kind of pull on your expertise because you've had a few circumstances in the past few weeks that were interesting. on removal.
Different.
Troubling. Yeah. And I think the last time we had you on, we talked about, I haven't gone back and listened to the episode, but being a female in the profession, both what it's like inside the industry and engaging with the public. Is that correct?
I think so. I think that was the last one that I was on. I think the one prior to that was some more lighthearted removal stories.
Oh, that's right.
But maybe right. Those two, maybe I have them reversed, but regardless, that's about where we left off. So,
okay. So not that people are just tuning in at episode 43.
Who knows?
You don't. What's today's date? It's February
7th.
Look at that.
Yeah. Next week is Valentine's Day.
That's notable for...
My better half marathon is this weekend. That's what Valentine's Day means.
Half marathon.
Yes, my better half marathon.
There you go. Uh-huh. And you're running it.
Uh-huh.
You ready?
No. This morning I woke up and I was thinking, man, I can't wait to sleep in this weekend. And then I thought,
not an option.
The race is at like 8 a.m. and it's in South Seattle, so no, I'm not sleeping.
Yeah, you're going to get out and run in the cold.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's one I've run a couple of times, and it's cute, and it's still February.
You know, the weather last year was pretty good. I definitely overdressed for it. The weather this year, as of the last week, has been fairly optimistic. I haven't checked the weather report for this weekend because I'm scared.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, you know what? It's any course that makes you loop around the same track twice, I'm not fond of, because I just want to be either out and back or point A to point B and done. I don't like passing through the finish area and then having to keep going.
Yeah. Well, and that marathon that I ran in November was a similar course, and you get to run around. Yeah, it was roof. Woof.
Yeah. And this is pretty much same location, mm-hmm. Seward Park. So mm-hmm. It's 4 months later, same thing, different days.
There you go. You know, I'm trying to, the conference has a copyright of 2021 on their website.
Perfect.
It's so close. And you can get official results, apply now, annual meeting board. I don't see an address on this. Oh, district date. Apparently that's where we are. Okay. I'm looking over the Conference of Funeral Service Examining Boards. And that is who all of us in this profession that are... licensed. I mean, to be a licensed funeral director or embalmer in this country, you need to pass their test. Mm-hmm. And their test is...
You're giving me a look and I'm not sure what response you're trying to get out of me.
Well, I mean, they set a standard. And I think we should appreciate the fact that there is a standard at all.
Yes. And I think I talked about this when... we did the late night redo episode where I talked about school and stuff, but I do appreciate the education it was able to provide and the insight on more traditional practices. Sure. So I think there's a lot of value in that.
It's been a lot of years since I took it, but I do remember when I took it. Oh, so many years ago. That would have been 2010, 2011, somewhere around in there. It seemed quaintly outdated.
Yes.
And I don't know how much they've done to update it, but I can't imagine that they launched it straight into 2024.
I don't think so. And I don't think I am far enough removed where I'm allowed to openly discuss the general questions that were on my... They update it every few years or so, but I... You know, it's a no-no to discuss answers. And I definitely got a few questions that were like, I don't know when this has ever been applicable.
Well, I remember there were computer questions and they asked what RAM was. And they asked what a floppy disk was.
Nice.
And I'm like, huh. This seems like it's A, not applicable to funeral directing, and be a little dated.
Yeah, I think I got one about death certificates that was prior to EDRS, like general something. And I was like,
Paper death certificates? What do you mean?
Well, I know we've talked about it in the office, so it wasn't completely foreign to me, but it was
I've still got a stack right here if you need one.
No, I'm okay.
Okay. We get a new system this week.
Whales.
Yep. It's for those of you that are in this state going through February of 2024, we are updating our electronic death registration system to a new one called Whales, spelled like the animal. And I couldn't tell you what the acronym means, but they're moving everything over. And as we sit here today on February 7th, there is actually no software to record a death certificate in Washington State. Apparently, we were almost ready for the rollout, but no one that I've talked to in our profession is actually registered to file a death certificate. So,
yeah. That,
which is, you know, and I've said for many years, we are not in the death business. We are in the death certificate business.
Ha ha ha!
Tell me I'm wrong. Well, you don't really deal with that side, do you?
With death certificates?
Yeah.
Not a ton. I mean, if families ask at the point of removal about death certificates, I'll tell them that our intake record, you know, which you, Jeff, have sort of custom designed, is set to start death certificate. So the information that they're verifying with me helps with it. I mean, making sure spelling is correct, making sure date of birth is correct,
stuff like that. The information used in that.
Not the form itself, but funeral directors then take the information from the intake record and they're able to use it when creating or starting the death certificate.
Oh, that's accurate.
You know, get a call after hours. Last name is actually the middle name. All these things, we have the opportunity to correct it before funeral director inputs it into the system. But that's really
the extent of it for you.
Yeah, I mean, I've done funeral directing training. I know how EDRS worked since it's no longer alive. Whales, I'll give it a week and then I'll lock in and see what it's like.
See how that goes. It's tough if you don't have an application in your position.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's one of those worlds that, yeah. I mean, for those of you out there and for you, Carrie, one thing that you find pretty quickly in funeral directing, I think a lot of funeral directors, myself included for a long time, lived in denial of the of the notion that we are in the death certificate business. You know, we all come to this profession with this desire to, you know, affect change in families' lives and be there for people at this difficult time and care for their dead loved one and create this space in this moment. And that is a lovely thought. But the reality is that much of it is collection of data to file and order certified copies of death certificates. And as much as families may want to or feel the need to remember or heal or grieve or whatever they come to the table wanting to solve, it's almost secondary, if not just flat out secondary, to getting a death certificate and closing an estate.
Right.
And that is a tough pill for a funeral director to swallow.
Yeah, I mean, no one enters this profession thinking, man, I cannot wait to make that death certificate. Yeah. Oh, man. Like, I just filing them nonstop really is my jam. That's what you do, but you don't enter it thinking that's the outcome. You enter it thinking you're going to be, you know, a lot more hands-on, a lot more sort of high touch.
And then, at some funeral homes, you can be. I mean, that's
right. I mean, even here, you can be, but it's very family dependent, and so much of it is still the paperwork.
That is true. So, on your removals, let's talk about the week you've had. Let's talk removal stories in general. And I know there's a couple of them that you need to be a little guarded and or sort of oblique about it because you have clients that need to be protected. But to knock on to our prior conversation, one thing that is a common thread with you and your colleagues is that you are treated differently as a woman at removals, and that you, I mean, a common refrain is that you don't get the respect that you deserve.
Yeah.
And there's sort of a darker moment that goes along with that.
Yeah, and I mean, not all of it boils back to gender or age or whatever it may be, but it definitely is a factor. So I, you know, because we've already talked about it to a certain extent, I don't want this to be just talking about women in the industry round two. With that said, though, there definitely are moments during removals where, you know, I've had families pretty much point blank tell me that, you know, you're a woman, haha, wouldn't it suck if something happened? And it's like, whoa, I'm in your house taking care of mom. Like, what are you doing right now? And like, that's the part that gets uncomfortable. You know, it's annoying when families will bring up like, oh, you know, I was just expecting men. Like, we already talked about that. And that happens more often than anything, you know, more sinister or, you know,
sure,
uncomfortable. But that's kind of to be expected. And I think, like we previously discussed, like I get a little annoyed just because of the frequency of it, but I don't necessarily blame them for having that opinion or thought either. So it's, you know, it's more of a personal grievance than it is a issue as a systematic whole, because we do a good job. And then they say, wow, that was great at the end, and we feel good and we leave. But if, you know, every now and then there's a circumstance where a family takes it too far because they feel like they have the power to, and it's not pleasant to encounter.
So now, when you say that, I mean, walk us through what a family taking that doubt too far looks like.
I mean, trying to keep it vague, we've had a few instances in the last few months, I would say, of, you know, we've accumulated more clients, which is fabulous. I, you know, love it when the business grows. And because the volume has increased, you know, the ratio of weird encounters to normal ones, you know, say it's 1 in every 100. Now that we're doing 3,000 more removals, like, okay, you know, we're going to get more weird ones along with the normal. So I feel like I've just seen it more, but we've also been handling more cases. You know, it varies. I mean, the circumstances always vary, but it usually is, from my perspective, the result of funeral personnel, whether it's us, whether it's somebody else, whether it's hospice, like somebody is sort of misguiding the family with expectations, and then we aren't meeting those expectations, and that's when something snaps. You know, I understand that sometimes, you know, an ETA might be longer than they want, or something else might come up that they aren't thrilled with. But we, you know, we're all on the same team. We're all trying to get to the same goal, and, you know, making some sort of generalized threat or, you know, off color comment isn't really helping or making any of us eager to continue with the removal.
Sure. I mean, for many, many years, I've told colleagues, you know, funeral directors at every level, you need to manage expectations.
Right.
I think that's the case with any profession. I don't think. I know that whether you're in sales at a luxury boutique or you're working at an auto parts store or an auto repair, you know, sort of different ends of the spectrum, ultimately your client's expectation of timeline and quality is, I mean, it's calibrated somewhere.
Right.
And if it isn't in line with what reality is, that calibration needs to happen somewhere. And if that calibration is done where an expectation is not met, as opposed to leading it and saying, hey, you might think that in our case, we'll be at your home in 25 minutes. When you show up 3.5 hours later, that expectation was breached by an action,
right,
rather than an education. And I mean, I get it. We live in a world where we've lived in a world for decades where you can order a pizza and have it to your house in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
We now live in a world where you can order a snowmobile and have it delivered tomorrow.
Right.
Like, I mean, on the back of a van, a gray van, you know, like it, our expectations have completely shifted. And because of the geography that most funeral homes deal with and staffing, the ETA, you know, the amount of time it takes from that initial notification to the time someone shows up on their doorstep can be grossly out of whack.
Right. I mean, it is very disproportionate, like you're saying, to the ability to get a different service a lot faster. And I mean, my little soapbox on that is, you know, with all the attempts of recruiting and getting more people, I guess, educated on the funeral side of life, you know, hey, I work in a funeral home, let me answer your questions. A lot of people aren't, you know, they just don't want to think about it. They don't want to engage with it. And that's absolutely okay. But because it is a less conventional, you know, job, I mean, it's not usually in the selection of mainstream cool jobs to get after high school. You know, there are less people who want to do it. But as a whole, we also feel like funerals are more expensive than they should be just as a society.
Sure.
But, you know, to keep costs low, we have limited staff, but then we have limited staff, so the ETAs are long, but they want fast ETAs, which would mean we would need more staff.
It is a bit of a catch-22, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, you don't tell someone that over the phone when you're giving them a three-hour ETA, but, you know, it's pizza can get to you faster, but they also have seven drivers, and they are located two blocks away.
Yeah, I think that most people, when, you know, gently reminded of what, you know, what we as professionals are sort of faced with are quite understanding. I mean, I think the vast majority.
We also live in a very lucky area. We were talking about that a little bit earlier of we're in our own little Seattle bubble and we don't really get a lot of opinions outside of the Seattle bubble. But as a whole, I feel like families are pretty nonchalant overall about a slightly longer ETA. And of course, I don't want ETAs to be long. You know, that's the ongoing battle we have on the daily. But in the off chance that it is longer, you know, sometimes people are unhappy. Very rarely are they like actually upset over it. More often than not, they're like, okay, I mean, like, we'll let the family come and go. We're saying goodbye. You know, can you give us a call when you're en route? It's so like, that, yeah, totally.
That opened the door. I mean, when you get someone who's genuinely upset, what does that look like to you and your team? I mean, is it usually just on the phone and by the time you get there, they've calmed down?
Usually, yeah. Or by the time we've arrived, you can tell that they're kind of holding back on their comments, but they recognize that we are here and they don't want to, you know, say or do anything that would potentially get us to not execute. Or at least that's the impression that I get.
Great choice of words.
Well,
perform the duties.
Yeah.
Yes.
Execute the job duties. But, you know, that's the impression that I get sometimes where you can tell that they aren't thrilled, but they're just kind of happy that we finally made it. But I mean, that I've had people get like upset to the extent of yelling and cursing at me over the phone over an hour and a half long ETA because, well, isn't your office right here? Well, it's a Saturday morning and I don't live at the funeral home.
Right.
So it takes me 20 minutes to pick up the vehicle and it takes me 40 minutes to drive to your house. Like, and you know, you don't phrase it that way or anything, but it's like, all right, 6:30 in the morning on a Saturday, you know, I can be there in an hour and a half. And unfortunately, I do want to brush my teeth first before talking to you. So it's going to take a moment.
That's fair.
So, I mean, it doesn't even need to be a long ETA. It can be due to a number of different factors. I mean, I've had people who they want to go back to work and this is their lunch break. And so they need us there ASAP. I've had, you know, people who are trying to catch a ferry or had dinner plans. You know, I'm going to go see a movie at 4. What do you mean you're going to be here at 3:30? It's
like, that is incredibly inconvenient, isn't it? I mean, it's...
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, if it weren't so grim, I mean, it'd be a great conversation topic with them, but clearly it's not the time or the place. So right. You just kind of, you know, okay, I'm sorry. We'll make it as fast as possible upon arrival. Hopefully you can still catch your movie.
Yeah. So when you get to a house and they are hostile, how do you defuse that?
I mean, I've only encountered it very small handful of times. It's so circumstance dependent. I mean, I have done a bad job of defusing before, and I've done an okay job of defusing. So it all depends on the family and kind of how the conversation is going and how worked up they are before our arrival. Because I've definitely been in a situation where it was failure before we even showed up. And so it's like there's not much you can do other than, you know, listen and acknowledge that you hear what they're saying, you know, acknowledge that their feelings are okay. And
is this the one that ended up with attorneys that you're referencing? Yeah.
That one, I feel like I did a pretty good job on. But well,
that was a shakedown from the word go. So
right. I mean,
there wasn't going to be a win there. They were looking for the outcome that they ended up getting.
Yes. But I mean, I'm finally reaching the point where, you know, I used to be, and I still am in a lot of ways, inclined to try and save the interaction. You know, I've never like straight up left a removal. I've never entered a house, started talking to someone and said, you know what? Nope. Like, gotta get out of here. But I'm finally reaching the point where I consider it as an option, and I wouldn't use it on any sort of regularity, but saving it for the most extreme of circumstances. But now, having been physically at two that have been potentially, you know, I don't know that.
I mean, feel free to just say it.
Well, I was going to say potentially dangerous. And it's like, well, I don't know that all of them have been, you know, both have been dangerous, but just abusive, I suppose. That, like, you know what? No, like, safety is more of a priority than making sure their feelings are all right. You know, if they are willing to, you know, try intimidation tactics and lock us in the house and, you know, threaten.
You mentioned that one. You brought that one up recently. That it was sort of years ago. Mm-hmm. You went to that one. Just sounded weird. Go ahead and talk about that one. It's been years.
Which
since
one?
The one that you and Miss H did. The guy.
Yeah. I mean, he just seemed like he wasn't very mentally well. I don't know that he was intending for anything to be off, but I did one with a former colleague who, you know, mom passed away. We get there at midnight because she passed at like 10 p.m. or something. You know, we show up and we don't even make it to the front door. He was standing outside and was like, can you come back tomorrow at noon? You know, I think she's going to wake up. And totally. Like, I want to go to bed.
Right.
That saves me 2.5 hours. Like, if that makes you feel better or more complete through this grief process, like, you take the time that you want. Nothing bad is going to happen to her, or
right,
nothing major is going to change in these next 12 hours. So we show up the next day. He's accepted that she's passed, you know. But we go inside the house, and the guy immediately just, like, turns around and locks the front door. And I remember my colleague
behind
and I,
you.
Yeah. Like, just, and it felt almost like you're going into somebody's house for, like, a dinner party or something. Like, you just walk in, and then, you know, the host opens the door, and they shut it behind you, and then you hear the click. And I remember looking over, and he's, like, messing with the lock. And I look at my colleague, and we both just kind of squint at each other. It's like, okay. But, I mean, he assisted with the transfer, which was helpful because mom was not a petite woman. And then he unlocked the door and let us out. But that was definitely the first one that stuck out in my head, is probably should have said something, but didn't really know what to say, because how do you anticipate that?
Well, and, man, so much of this job is walking a fine line of, and this is where Nicole chimes, I can hear Nicole's voice in my head. You know, I mean, the grief process and people walking through that and the emotions that come along with it. And, you know, one of them, I mean,
that could have very much been habitual of every time he opens the front door, he turns around and locks it, because if you don't lock it right away, you might forget. Like, it didn't feel weird. Like, he didn't give off any particular energy that made us feel like jeopardized, and you know, our safety wasn't a concern.
That's a noise that
you notice it for yeah. sure.
You know, I used to, when I attended bar, there was one noise. You just knew it.
Broken glass.
Well, I mean, yeah, that one, but that's every night, all sure. night, you know. Head hitting wood. Like, whenever you hear someone's head hit the bar or the floor, it is a very distinct sound, mm-hmm. not unlike locking the door. And it's just...
Everything else, like, it's almost yeah. that high-pitched beep, like, kind of running through your head as you process it.
It's just like, oh, that's not... And you just turn around slowly and you're like, oh, what'd you do, buddy? Anyway, yeah, there's unique sounds when you walk into a house and mannerisms and things that it's just, I don't know. I mean, we forget. Well, we collectively, you and I in our careers have probably done, I mean, you've done way more removals than I
at this point probably
ever will. I mean, through the rest of my career,
never say never. You can get back into it.
That's true. I could. But I mean, between the two of us, probably now 3,000, 4,000 removals combined.
I mean, I was somewhere, I think just under 1,000 on my academic, or not academic, but my state internship log for licensure. Mm. So that was in a 9-month period of time, just under 1,000. I was working a little bit more in field than I currently am, mm. but...
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I've definitely done a few thousand probably at this point, or at least assisted as part of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I'm probably in the hundreds. Well, I know I'm in the hundreds. I don't know that I made it to four figures. I've done a fair amount. I always say that I'm definitely not your best colleague, and you always fight that. But
because you're so good with people. Mm. You are.
Thanks. I'll take it. Technically speaking, I'm just not, I don't know. I'm not comfortable. I just don't do it enough.
Sure.
But that said, there's enough experience there that, you know, it's interesting that, or if you look at the total man hours worked, mm-hmm. I mean, this is where the business side of me comes in, you know, person hours that are worked in our field. So we run 24 hours a day, two people per shift, three mm-hmm. shifts. I mean, you start doing the math and we're talking tens of thousands of hours and tens of thousands of removals over the course of 5 to 10 years.
Right.
And really, knock on wood.
Do you hear that, listeners?
Right. There's been no real threats. Like there's...
No, I mean,
there's been a lot of uncomfortable, there's right. been a lot of, but we haven't had people, you know.
No one's threatened, like, direct violence that was actionable. There's been sort of a...
Which is kind of fascinating.
Right, I mean, well, I take that back. Ashley had the one that I ended up playing mediator on because she was dispatched to a call and family, I know what happened. Funeral home gave an ETA that was about 12 hours before we were even dispatched to it because they just, for whatever reason, the call was not completed. And so by the time we were heading over, family was pretty worked up. But he ended up calling her back and threatening that if she doesn't bend physics to get there at an impossible time because he was on, you know, a totally different section of the state, that... she is not going to like what happens next. And that's when, you know, I called back and was like, this is it. Like, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fair. You know, I think it's interesting because that goes back to the expectation thing, right?
Right.
Now.
And we work with a lot of really amazing funeral homes. I'm sure they're all amazing, but, you know, I'm biased towards the ones that I work with.
I mean, we do have a great client base.
Right, but we get so few of these kind of weird one-offs because the funeral directors and funeral homes have set great expectations going in.
And that's, so we didn't, for those of you that haven't met Carrie in prior episodes, Carrie runs a company that is B2B. It's business to business, serving funeral homes with their transportation needs. So funeral homes hire Carrie and her team to do removals for them and transport them to wherever their storage is. And so the result is you have multiple different funeral homes who have different process and procedure, different communication styles and or process. There's, you know, different expectations that are laid down with the families based off of what the funeral home desires that outcome to be. And sometimes you have funeral directors that aren't necessarily in line with the organization itself that will set expectations that are not necessarily in line with the reality of what can be done. So using myself as an example, early Jeff, when I started, baby funeral Jeff.
Fresh face, just happy to be here.
Back in 2012, yeah. Couldn't be happier. Mm-hmm. I had a desire and expectation that the teams that I dispatched to a family would get there within 90 minutes.
I would love for that to be the reality. And a lot of times it is,
mm-hmm.
but not always.
Well, so part of it was I was doing a lot of the removals.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had a 90-minute expectation for hospitals mm-hmm. and morgue. Like, I get the call and I'm there in 90 minutes. And, you know, at a certain case volume, you can do that. When you have 18 families a month or 20 families a month.
Right.
And you're Johnny on the spot, you can make that happen.
The chances of getting three at the same time kind of overlapping are minimal when the case volume sure. is such.
So, you know, we had at that time a contractor that was doing the overnight stuff and actually residentials. And they were actually pretty good at that point. It was uncommon for the ETA to extend past a couple hours, 2 to 3 hours, which is pretty good, you know?
I mean, yeah.
I was okay with it. I wasn't thrilled, but I was okay with it.
Right.
And now, having been more involved on the vendor side, I mean, you and I have had the discussion of calibrating those expectations through those funeral directors, but ultimately it becomes a mandate by what your services are at all.
Right.
And that's a sort of mouthful of saying, look, we just don't serve these geographical regions.
Right. And that's been the on again, off again, imminent future that we tried to recalibrate a little bit, but then as we've gotten busier and as the industry has taken the little alternate route that it's been sure. on, you know, we're still
clarity's sake, it's the turn that we've referenced in prior episodes right. in our market, in the Seattle market, and how
yeah.
the players in the market have dramatically changed.
Staffing, cremations, geographical area, you know, the whole mm-hmm. died in bit. We are still finding ourselves dispatched to, you know, further counties on a very regular basis, which I didn't really expect. So, you know, will we need to reevaluate and recalibrate expectations here soon? Probably.
Yeah.
But we've been in the busy season and just kind of rolling with what
through.
We can. Yeah. But I, you know, we've been very transparent with funeral homes when they do dispatch us to further counties that, you know, tell that family to get comfortable because,
right.
you know, we're currently in, say, North Snohomish, and you're dispatching us to the southwestern quadrant of Washington. And I'm going to eat lunch first before yeah, heading
for
over.
People, yeah, for people who aren't in our area, you know, Snohomish is north of Seattle.
3 or 4 hour drive
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess this is my little informational bit for the general public listening, the non-funeral side. Something that I've definitely learned since starting this job is, you know, it's okay to call a funeral home reporting a death without wanting the removal to happen immediately. And it's kind of helpful to call and be like, hey, you know, mom is probably going to pass today or mom has already passed. We want family to come by.
Sure.
Can you come in a few hours? But getting that initial notification early, like the funeral home, by all means, like they're not going to say, okay, but like legally we have to be there in 20 minutes. No.
Right.
But with the delays we're already working with, more likely than not, you'll slot right into the back of the queue, which will probably be right around that time that you requested, and you get your extra time. I've encountered a lot of situations where families will call us and they've already had their 4 or 5 hours of family time. And then when we give them a 2 to 3 hour ETA on top of it, they're, well, we've already been with her for 6 hours. It's like,
not my problem. You didn't call.
And it's like, I'm so sorry, but we just found out and we are, you know, with another family right now. So we will be there soon
as we can.
Back to
the pizza delivery analogy. It's right. Like, well, you're hungry now because you didn't order it an hour ago.
Right. You can totally schedule delivery.
Right.
You can customize it, add the toppings you want, and we can plan it when you are ready. But
so I coined the term delayed removal.
Yeah.
And that one.
I love a good delayed removal.
Well, because a delayed removal can be scheduled too. Mm-hmm. And so you as the removal driver or dispatcher can say, okay, we can accomplish 1, 2, and 3 in front of this one and get those done and show up on time and ready to work. Whereas, you know, if it's a scramble, the other thing on top of calibrating expectations, one of the phrases I've used for years is emergencies don't happen in funeral homes.
No.
They happen in emergency rooms.
Right.
Like, they're already dead.
Yeah. Like, time stops.
Yeah.
For them when they die.
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, while it may be uncomfortable, you know, living with the uncomfortable isn't fun, but the reality is she's still going to be dead in 3 hours. Now, that doesn't mean that that's a good customer service expectation or
no, you know, and it's very family dependent. I mean, there are certainly families that you start talking to and you can sense from the way that they're talking about the situation that they would be comfortable with it if you sort of lay it out for them. And I've done that when giving ETAs. They'll say, oh, really? And you're like, yeah. But, you know, here's kind of what you can do in the meantime. Or you had mentioned so-and-so is coming from out of town.
Have
do
you
know what time
crochet?
They're getting?
Now might be a good time.
Have you caught up on Netflix today?
Yeah.
You know, The Bachelor just had a new episode.
Right.
You know, you can watch Joey play tennis. Come on.
Like, you, of course, have lost me.
Yep.
Yep.
My mom and I started watching the latest season of The Bachelor. And I'm 1.5 episodes in. And I guess he plays tennis. And that's all I've caught on by now.
That sounds like an excellent use of time.
Well, been watching it in about 20-minute increments while I eat dinner after coming home from late-night removals, and then I go to bed. So,
gotcha.
Been slowly inching through it.
So, finishing up with the threatening or difficult ones, you know, I think it's interesting that it doesn't happen that much. And
yeah, I definitely expected it to. I mean, in my initial interview for the job, I remember asking, I just worded something like, my mom gets scared and wanted to know what safety measures there are in place in case I go missing. And you're like, why would that happen? Well, there are trackers on the car. You'll be fine. I mean, we'll notice the car's missing. So.
At some point, we'll find your body.
And
if nothing else, the medical examiner will call.
I didn't tell her that right away. I was like, oh, yeah, no, it's great. Like, don't worry. It's all taken care of. But
what could possibly go wrong with this?
Yeah, but like the reality is that people are super, you know, fine. They're oftentimes peaceful and pleasant to talk to. And, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday and like over the phone, and she was just absolutely delightful. She was sitting bedside to dad who had passed, and she's playing his favorite music. And we were talking about, you know, just like how her, you know, day throughout this passing and everything has been. And, you know, then she starts rattling off like all the vital information for the funeral home of like marital status and implants and whatever.
I love it when you get a call and you're like, okay, I actually don't need to do anything else now because you just covered
everything. Right. I told her that at the end and she laughed and she's like, I didn't know it'd be that easy. It's like, yeah, I mean, I will probably have like 2 or 3 follow-up questions and you just kind of laid it out.
You're good to go. Well done.
Cool. Like, I hope that brings some peace throughout the afternoon. Like, your stress level should be low.
on the funeral directing side, I've had that conversation a few times where you kind of roll through some of the questions and they start answering and it becomes this dialogue and mm-hmm. you're just sitting in front of your computer just type, oh, yeah, well, you know, dad was born in Massachusetts and, yeah, I think he was born in, you know, like Stony Brook or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, well, that sounds lovely. Click, click, click.
Yeah. You know, you know, Susan was always blah, blah, blah. Oh, you know, Susan's his mom. And you're okay.
Does she have a maiden name?
What's her maiden name and computer password and social security?
You do know maiden names on a duster.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
That was the joke.
I know. but I mean, some people just like way beyond the oversharing amount of information where it's like, you covered all of it and more. And I'm not going to write down the more because
I don't need it.
Nope. But no, like we get so few odd cases. I mean, like families can have their quirks and stuff, but the threatening, the, you know, unpleasant, whatever, you know, I've definitely been in situations that feel a bit uncomfortable, but it's not always the family. It's oftentimes just like the environment or the family coupled with the environment or, you know, why are there 50 people in this room right now? I can't move my elbows.
Yeah, I did one 2 weeks ago, I guess, and we showed up. I was called in to help with some training. And it was one of those things where there were, I'd say probably, I was going to say 75 people there. It may have been less.
It's a lot of people.
You think?
It's a few.
I mean, I feel like that number's high. It may have been 50, but it was a lot of people.
Like a lot of people.
And it ended up being a church. It was an Islamic family. And the imam was there. And it became like a service. And we're staying in there. And there was certainly, I don't want anyone to think that it was hostile. But the tensions were somewhat high to make it align with what their spiritual needs were in that moment.
Sure.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, how are we gonna pull this off?
Right.
And it worked out beautifully. I ended up sort of stuck behind the cot and the imam, and so here I am with this dead woman and this guy, and I'm stuck in between him and a wall, trying to look cute and thoughtful. Like, okay. But it turned out great, but you got 70 people watching you, and it's like, oh, it can be nervy.
Oh, it definitely can be. And or the ones where you're kind of, you know, in tight quarters of some way, and that's when somebody wants to either start video chatting with a relative who couldn't make it or just filming. And it's like, you're gonna watch me kind of awkwardly crawl over the hospital bed to get to the other side. Yeah. Like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah.
Don't mind me.
Well, you know, I mean, the video chat thing's an interesting one because it is, I don't know that I've ever seen a circumstance where there, I mean, we talked about that one that was kind of a shakedown. I don't know that I've seen or been involved in one where they're doing the video as a gotcha.
It never comes across as a gotcha. It always makes me nervous because if anything goes a little bit less smoothly, like even loading the cot in, if it gets, you know,
hung up on the backboard.
Yeah, or if it makes a funny sound or something, like if the, you know, release mechanism is squeaky or whatever. Like, I'm so hyper-focused on all the little things that are going to be picked up. But it never feels like a gotcha.
No, it doesn't. And I still, I mean, there's so many things about removals that are, they aren't left a chance, but there's so many things that can go not great.
Yeah.
That I, put the phone away.
I had somebody Facebook Live it one time.
Oh no.
I don't remember who I was with. It was a cute little apartment in Seattle somewhere. And I think there's a few steps involved and maybe we needed to upright. It wasn't anything crazy complicated, but you know, it was a cot removal. We didn't use a backboard or anything.
We talked about uprighting. It's when you have the person strapped in and you lift the head end up. And so they're standing upright on their feet on the cot, but they're strapped to this gurney.
Yeah. It's at about a 45 degree angle and the cot
is ish.
I mean, maybe I'll buy a little measuring
tool. But
it's a very stable position and you can put them in the upright position and then hands off, walk away from the cot and it'll stand there. So not that it's encouraged, but it is completely stable and safe to do so.
Right. You'd be fine doing it. No one wants to watch that. Right.
But it's how we navigate corners when, say, a backboard or med sled are inappropriate tools for the situation. Sure. You know, when you can use the cot, you can just kind of pop them up and dance around the corner and level them
so
back out again.
So a cot, I think, is 82 or 84 inches. So
I feel like 84 sounds correct,
which is 7 feet. Anyway, the idea is if you're coming out of a bedroom and the hallway is only 36 inches wide and you have to make a 90 degree turn, the math doesn't work.
No, I would love that math to find a way to work.
I mean, if you've got the doorway is a standard doorway width, not an ADA or, you know, a double door, you have to tip that cot upright to make it around that corner. And so that's something that a lot of people out in the world don't realize is a thing.
And that's part of what, you know, the filming never feels like a gotcha, but that's one of those that I always get a little nervous about. Of so much of a successful upright or a successful removal in general is about the conversation and energy you put into it before even touching the body.
Sure.
That when you start filming right at the point where we're uprighting and doing funky whatever,
right,
you know, okay, I'm gonna lift and try and coast it here, like whatever the dialogue is.
And there's a lot of communication between the two people on the cot.
Right. Mm-hmm. And like the person who's watching this Facebook Live or FaceTime or whatever it might be doesn't have that context leading in.
Mm.
And that's what makes me nervous.
Yeah, that's true.
You don't know what's going on, and this would look really weird if you didn't have it explained to you first.
That's true. That's very true.
So,
you know, and then there's all, it happens so rarely, but God, we had one that wasn't I remember the lady. It was down south, and there were three of us, and got the sigh when we went to go upright her.
Oh, from the person.
Yeah.
I thought you meant the next of kin.
No.
Just say what sigh?
No. The
moan, the death, whatever. I forget. I haven't been in school for a little bit.
What is it called? Anyway.
It's not the death rattle, but it's the natural just expulsion of air from lungs that can sometimes cause the vocal cords to sort of go off.
So when you strap someone in and you set them upright, that you'll get sort of a movement with the body that pushes the air out of the lungs that was still in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that pipe still has vocal cords, and you get the and people are like, is she still? No. No, dude, she is well gone. But
yeah.
I'm not putting her back.
No. I have only ever had to put one person back. We technically didn't even get him onto the cot, but we showed up and family was convinced that he had come back to life, and we had to call hospice to come through and like double verify.
Mm.
And from my perspective, he did not look alive. I can guarantee you that he did not.
They never
look.
Do.
No, but he had like a O2 reader or something on, and I guess it picked up some sort of signal, so they were convinced that he was able to breathe again.
For the love of Pete.
Uh-huh. But he, full rigor, you know, eyes kind of sunken in, glazed over.
Right.
You know, cold, very
ain't
cold.
Getting up.
No. But like, that has only ever happened to me once. And I guess that's the removal I've walked away from.
Yeah.
No threats were made. Nothing shady. Nothing, you know.
No.
Bad, but family was actually very nice, and the home itself was adorable. They're hopeful.
Yeah. Optimism's great.
Yeah.
You know, there were two cases that were like right next to each other. God, 2 years ago? I want to say it was during the pandemic, where there was one guy. Why does all the weird stuff happen in Colorado?
Because it's Colorado.
I mean, yeah, but you'd expect that out of Florida.
You're a mile in the air. Everything's different. The oxygen tastes different.
Y'all can write in and tell me what a horrible person I am. But you know what? Florida and Colorado, I don't know what it is in the
air.
They're
the same species.
Ooh, them's fighting words. So, no, but
I've been to both, and they both have very lovely areas.
I'm sure. There was a guy that was, he woke up in the prep room.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a woman that was proximate time-wise that woke up in the cooler or something like that.
Yeah.
And
And then it recently happened, I think, in Oregon, too.
Did it?
Yeah. Like, somebody was getting cut for embalming or something, and they're like, this person's not dead.
How?
I don't know. Like,
I mean, back to how many removals we've done. I've been around thousands of dead people. And, like, none of them. How?
I mean, I've been there within an hour of passing on several, and they're still warm, and they're still kind of soft, and you know, rigor hasn't set in.
It happens all the time.
It's kind of uncomfortable, because when you're starting to wrap them in the vinyl shroud, I mean, your family will be like, you can cover his face. And it's like, I don't know that I want to cover his face.
I'm good.
I'm going to be the one saying his face is uncovered for this one, because I'm not sure that I feel comfortable putting plastic over his nose and mouth.
Adjacent to that, and then I suppose we are rambling ought to wrap up.
Yeah. Removals.
So I've recently, in the past year or so, I've developed sort of an odd little ew making the bed. So I'll get up, I'll go get, you know, start getting ready, and I'll come back and I'll go to make the bed, and the bed's warm.
Mm-hmm.
Creeps me out. Because, I mean, you know, you pull dead people out of the bed and they're still warm. The bed's kind of warm. That used to creep me out because they're dead. They shouldn't be. But now it's sort of reverse. Like, that bed's still warm. Like, it's like dead people.
I get that you know, there has been some sort of fluid that has exited the person, but you can feel it kind of permeate the glove a little bit, where it almost feels like your hand's a little sweaty inside.
What kind of fluid do
you have? It's usually pee. Like the
permeating a glove? Like going through a glove?
It feels like it sometimes, because it'll be so saturated that, like, it just feels like the glove is clinging to my fingers. It's usually people who are wearing diapers and maybe soiled it at some point in time.
Isn't that sweat on your hand?
Probably, but from, like, being fully, like, you know, you're wrapping your arms around their hips to help move them, and you touch the wet diaper or whatever, and then I feel like it's on my hands.
So this is a full mental problem that you have.
We're talking about getting ews. That's my ew.
Okay. I'm not trying to disparage your ew. I'm just being clear that you probably don't have urine on your hand.
Probably not. And I'm fine with the dead people. I just don't like the pee. So that's where I'm drawing the line.
Everyone's got their fluid. Yeah. Everyone's got a fluid.
Yeah. Somebody poops, that's okay. It's totally natural. Purge, I don't want to touch it, but it happens. It's natural. Pee? No.
Was it you that had problems? No, I think it was Nicole with eyes and mouth.
Oh, I definitely don't like eyes. I can tolerate. I mean, I don't really want to do cornea donation stuff. Like, I don't want to mess around with them. But, if it comes to, like, setting features, the eyes don't really bother me. I don't like cleaning out the nasal passage and mouth and any sort of suture or anything that goes with those.
Really?
Yeah. And
it's one of my faves.
You know, I think it's very much person dependent, not person doing the prep, but like the body dependent, because the ones that we practiced on in school were definitely down for a while. It was during COVID, so we weren't able to be in class and actually practice on the Willed Body Program donors until months after they had been donated. So they had accumulated a lot of gunk. They were just in, you know, they were at a minor point of decomposition where everything was kind of loose and ready to, like, teeth came out really easily and, details like that, where it was sort of the perfect storm of this freaks me out. But I've seen at, like, the care center, other people set features and it looks super normal.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I mean, aspirating people has always been wildly satisfying to me. I when I was doing my apprenticeship, you know, suturing mouths shut, there's something satisfying. Anyway, we digress. We should probably wrap up.
Probably.
But here's at the very end of this, here's my plea to all of you listening. Feel free to write in. Like, tell us what you want out of this podcast.
Anything.
So it's chatter, chatter, at thecotculture, thecotculture.
Right? You got it.
.com.
Nailed it.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to rededicate myself to trying to get the website updated and get that domain name moved over.
Do it.
And the other thing I was thinking about was moving this to YouTube and just sort of live streaming it.
Okay.
I don't know.
Sure.
Just a thought.
Yeah. Get sort of secondary format going.
Yeah. I mean, then we could have like a chat and, you know, people could type questions. I don't have to like write it into, I don't have to email
it. We can just do a Facebook Live if you want.
While you're upwriting?
Yeah. I mean, I'll give an upwriting demonstration on the live stream.
That could be good.
Suddenly this turns into just a training guide in itself.
That could be kind of cool.
Kind of comes full circle.
I kind of like it. Okay. See, y'all need to weigh in on this. All right. For that, let's wind it up. Thank you everyone for listening. And Carrie, thanks for stepping in. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for letting me ramble. I know it didn't really follow a specific direction, but
that's okay.
Yeah. Podcast is back. That's what matters.
Thank you all. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.